Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in 1 Samuel chapter 18. I'll do the entire chapter, all 30 verses in this audio. We will entitle this section David, Saul, Jonathan, and Michael. We're going to see David's relationships with the family members of Saul. Our context is this. David had just finished knocking off Goliath in the last chapter, chapter 17. So we start now with 1 Samuel 18, verses 1 and 2. When David had finished speaking with Saul, Jonathan committed himself to David and loved him as much as he loved himself. Saul kept David with him from that day on and did not let him return to his father's house. Now, when had David finished speaking with Saul? This refers to the previous chapter, last verse, where David had just finished killing Goliath. 1 Samuel 17, verse 58 says this, Saul said to David, "Whose son are you, young man?" "The son of your servant Jesse of Bethlehem," David answered. And so, at that time, in the height of David's military glory, Jonathan committed himself to David and loved him as much as he loved himself. John Gill says of this, quote, "Such were the comeliness of his person, his graceful mien and deportment, his freedom and fluency of expression, his courage and undauntedness, joined with prudence, modesty, and integrity." Well, no wonder Jonathan committed himself to David. John Gill speaks in only the way that John Gill can speak when he describes something. Now, Jonathan hadn't been close to David when David was a mere minstrel. I'm assuming that he became a minstrel before he slayed Goliath. In our last audio, we talked about how that's controverted as far as the time order. But assuming that, and I do assume that just for the sake of simplicity, now we see that Jonathan is more impressed with David as an heroic warrior rather than as a harp player. Saul kept David with him from that day on and did not let him return to his father's house. Remember in chapter 17, David had been going back and forth to Saul's house. He would tend sheep back in Bethlehem, and then he would go up and play the harp for Saul. David would go back to Gibeah, where Saul was, when Saul would go nuts, apparently, play for him, and then when Saul would get calmed back down, David would then return to tending his father's sheep. Well, now, Saul didn't let David go. One possible reason is that because David needed to stay in Gibeah because he was going to marry Saul's daughter. Why? Well, because Saul's daughter had been promised to the one who killed Goliath, and David had killed Goliath. We read in 1 Samuel 17:25, "Previously an Israelite man had declared, 'Do you see this man who keeps coming out?'" That was talking about Goliath. "He comes to defy Israel. The king will make the man who kills him very rich and will give him his daughter. The king will make the household of that man's father exempt from paying taxes in Israel." Well, if David is going to marry a daughter of the king, he's going to have to be there in Gibeah with Saul. Now, Saul might have kept David with him because David was such a good military guy that he needed good soldiers to fight the Philistines. I suspect that's the real reason, because we're going to see later on that it is a possibility that Saul had welched on the deal of giving David his daughter. So I'm not really sure that that's the reason that Saul kept David in Gibeah, but I suspect it's because David was such a good military guy. We go now to 1 Samuel 18, verses 3 and 4. Then Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was on him and gave it to David, with his armor, including his sword and his bow and his belt. Now that David had Jonathan's court, David could appear at court in a royal robe instead of shepherd's gear. Adam Clark says of this, "Presents of clothes or rich robes in token of respect and friendship are frequent in the East. And how frequently arms and clothing were presented by warriors to each other in token of friendship may be seen in Homer and other ancient writers." It's like NBA players exchanging jerseys with one another, kind of a ritualistic type thing, to show their friendship. Jameson Fawcett Brown says, quote, "To receive any part of the dress which had been worn by a sovereign or his eldest son and heir is deemed in the East the highest honor which can be conferred on a subject." Not only did David have Jonathan's robe, he had Jonathan's armor. So now David could appear as a soldier at court, which of course he was, as well as the weapons, of course, the sword, the bow, and the belt. Jameson Fawcett and Brown say, concerning such covenants that were made, "Such covenants of brotherhood are frequent in the East. They are ratified by certain ceremonies and in the presence of witnesses that the persons covenanting will be sworn brothers for life." So that covenant showed this friendship was a big deal. We go now to 1 Samuel 18, verses 5 through 7. "So David went out wherever Saul sent him, and prospered, and Saul set him over the men of war. And it was pleasing in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. It happened as they were coming, when David returned from killing the Philistine, that the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. The women sang as they played and said, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. So David is coming back from a military foray. He's coming back to tell King Saul about it. That's what it means when he returned from killing the Philistines to meet King Saul. And on the way to meet King Saul, all the women came out of the houses singing and dancing. Now, verse 5 says, David went out wherever Saul sent him. Saul sent David out on any business, of course, but especially military matters. David eventually got set by Saul over the men of war, a contingent of the army. Of course, the whole army was led by Saul's first cousin, Abner. It was pleasing in the sight of all the people. That's used in a general sense, of course. All does not always mean exhaustively all. It just doesn't. And there's an example of that right here, because there were some of the people in Saul's court who were enemies of David. And they didn't like all this adulation being poured on David. We read it later on in this chapter, verses 22 and 25. Then Saul commanded his servants, speak to David secretly, saying, Behold, the king delights in you, and all his servants love you. Now therefore become the king's son-in-law. Drop down to verse 25. Saul then said, Thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry except 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies. Well, that sounds innocent enough, but then the next phrase in verse 25 says this, Now Saul planned to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines, and he had people at court who were willing to help him carry out his nefarious scheme, which fortunately failed, but there were people at the court that didn't like David, but most of the people did. So all can mean a great very many, as well as exhaustively all. Now, this occasion of singing and dancing by the women happened when David returned from killing the Philistine. That could have been killing Goliath. Adam Clark suggests that. But it also could mean killing Philistines on some unnamed expedition. So the singular there from killing the Philistine, that doesn't, you can read that two ways. You can read the singular Philistine Goliath, or you can say killing the Philistine, Philistine being just a general term for a member of the Philistine ethnic group. Now, in favor of it being an unnamed expedition, but not specifically killing of Goliath, at that time, Saul was not jealous of David. He was very happy with David when David killed Goliath. But by this time, he's starting to be jealous, and so it took some time for Saul's jealousy to build, and so Saul kept promoting him into military affairs in order to get him killed. And so I think this is just one of his military expeditions. Now, one could imagine that politically, Saul was forced to promote David, and so those promotions at first would not have been from Saul's favorable feelings toward David. But I don't think so. I think Saul really did think David was a good asset. He wasn't jealous with him at first, but time goes on. And so this is not talking about Goliath here, but this is talking about just some unnamed foray against the Philistines. Well, these women who were rejoicing as David comes back in were doing what was typically done after military victories in the Orient. As Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say, quote, This is a characteristic trait of Oriental manners. On the return of friends long absent, and particularly on the return of a victorious army, bands of women and children issue from the towns and villages to form a triumphal procession, to celebrate the victory, and as they go along, to gratify the soldiers with dancing, instrumental music, and extemporary songs, in honor of the generals who have earned the highest distinction by feats of gallantry. The Hebrew women, therefore, were merely paying the customary gratulations to David as the deliverer of their country. I love that word, gratulations. It's an old-fashioned English word, I guess. Now, the women are saying Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. That doesn't sound like Goliath, because Goliath was only one that was killed, not 10,000. However, you could say, well, yeah, but the Philistine army was killed after Goliath went down because the Israelite army chased the Philistines and killed bokus of them. So that's not really an argument one way or the other, but I honestly think it's just referring to another expedition against the Philistines. And of course, the numbers are not to be taken literally. It doesn't mean Saul slain 2,000 or 3,000 on the dot and David killed 10,000 or 20,000 on the dot. Of course not. These are round numbers. Now, the question arises, were the women wise to do this? I don't think so. Either does John Gill. Either does Jameson, Fawcett, Brown, who say this, quote, But they committed a great indiscretion by praising a subject at the expense of their sovereign. I think they shouldn't have done that. It led to a very angry king, and that didn't help David out any. 1 Samuel 18:8-9. Then Saul became very angry, for this saying displeased him, and he said, They have ascribed to David 10,000s, but to me they have ascribed thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? Saul looked at David with suspicion, with suspicion from that day on. Now, John Gill says that the women had made Saul angry because the women did not address Saul as King Saul. Saul has killed his thousands. I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I think what Saul was mad at was because David got 10 times as much glory as he did with those numbers. Now, Saul had reason to be suspicious and jealous of David. He could have put two and two together. David's coming for the kingdom. Well, Saul already knew that Samuel, the great prophet Samuel, had already twice prophesied that the kingdom would be taken away from Saul. Right before the Battle of Michmash, which Jonathan won, Samuel had instructed Saul to wait for Samuel to get to Gilgal before he attacked. Saul waited 7 days and then left without Samuel, and Samuel's ticked off about it. And in the context of that sin of Saul, we read in 1 Samuel 13:13-14, Samuel said to Saul, "You have been foolish. You have not kept the command. You have not kept the command which the Lord your God gave you. It was at this time that the Lord would have permanently established your reign over Israel, but now your reign will not endure. The Lord has found a man loyal to him, and the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people, because you have not done what the Lord commanded." Oh, the Lord has found a man loyal to him. Now, who might that be? And Saul's thinking, well, you know, Samuel prophesied that a man more loyal to God than I would be is going to take over because my reign will not endure. And it looks like this might be the man, David. Look at what he's doing. Also, after Saul went after the Amalekites a couple of chapters later in 1 Samuel 15, and Saul didn't kill Agag and Agag's livestock like Samuel told him to, we read this, 1 Samuel 15:23. Samuel tells Saul, "For rebellion is like the sin of divination, and defiance is like wickedness and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has rejected you as king." So Saul is probably feeling pretty rejected already, and now he's got mental problems. He's got demons. The Holy Spirit of the Lord has left him. He's backslidden. He's in rebellion against God. And now the people are giving his subordinate more glory than he's getting. And not only that, that glory is well deserved because David's doing very well as a military leader. He's not a slacker. He's a successful guy. He was the hero of killing Goliath. I wasn't. We go now to 1 Samuel 18, verses 10 and 11. "Now it came about on the next day that an evil spirit from God came mightily upon Saul, and he raved in the midst of the house, while David was playing the harp with his hand, as usual, and a spear was in Saul's hand. Saul hurled the spear, for he thought, 'I will pin David to the wall.' But David escaped from his presence twice." Now David, despite his military prowess, was still humble enough to keep doing his musician's job. He kept playing the harp, trying to keep Saul calmed down, or the demon in Saul calmed down, even after David had risen high in the kingdom. Twice Saul tried to kill David. Saul escaped twice. That could have been on one occasion, or it could have been in two different sessions with Saul. We don't know, but it doesn't matter. Once, twice, somebody throws a spear at me, but David probably thought, well, he's got a demon. That's not his true self. So I'm going to put up with it. I'm going to play again. And I imagine David kept his eye out for the spear, though. Especially when that evil spirit, that demon, which came from God, has punishment, it would make Saul start raving in the midst of the house. Now, what does raving mean? Well, King James has prophesied, but, you know, I don't think that's a good translation. If it does mean prophesied, it means that Saul would be delivering divine songs and prophecies the way prophets do, perhaps prophesying that David would be king, as the demon would prophesy with fake prophecy. Or it could be that he was raving, he's just acting like a prophet, mimicking a prophet's motions and gestures, acting like a madman, using ridiculous gestures like a madman. Or maybe he pretended to be a prophet in a rather calm, sane manner so as to put David off his guard. I don't think so. Raved, the NASB has raved, doesn't sound like he's talking in a calm, sane manner. David must have seen him acting crazy because he was playing music to calm him down. And so I don't think Saul was acting calm and devilishly rational here. And when he was raving, of course, it was probably the evil spirit speaking through Saul. It could be. It could be Saul raving, or it could be the devil speaking through Saul, having taken control of Saul's vocal cords. We go down to 1 Samuel 18, verses 12 through 16. "Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David but had left Saul. Therefore, Saul reassigned David and made him commander over 1,000 men. David led the troops and continued to be successful in all his activities because the Lord was with him. When Saul observed that David was very successful, he dreaded him. But all Israel and Judah loved David because he was leading their troops. Why was Saul afraid? Saul may have been afraid that David would retaliate against him for throwing a spear at him and trying to kill him. He might have been afraid of David because usually when there's a palace revolt, the king gets either thrown in jail or gets killed. At any rate, Saul wants to get David out of the court at Gibeah, and so he reassigns David, I guess, reassigns him from being a harp player, made David command over 1,000 men. Now, why would he do that? Well, there's some options as to why he would do that, to cover up his malice toward David. People would look and say, oh, David was promoted. Saul must love David because he promoted David. Saul, of course, doesn't want people to know that Saul has evil thoughts toward such a popular guy. Saul could have reassigned David to be a commander over 1,000 men so that David would be killed in battle, Saul hoped. Or maybe, as Jameson Fawcett Brown suggests, maybe Saul just wanted to get David away from the court so he wouldn't get any more honor from government officials and the people. His own son, Jonathan, had become spellbound by David and had entered into a covenant with him. Saul might have known that, might not have, but it's obvious he's lost his own son. He's lost his officials. He's just lost the people in general. They all love David. They don't love Saul. One might ask the question, well, why didn't Saul just banish David from the kingdom? Well, Saul couldn't do that for political reasons. David was too popular. If he banished David, everybody would look down on Saul. Verse 16, all Israel and Judah loved David. Why is Judah especially mentioned? Because that's David's home tribe, and they get honor for that. And so that's why Judah is mentioned there. We go to 1 Samuel 18, verses 17 through 18. Then Saul said to David, here is my older daughter, Merab. I will give her to you as a wife. Only be a valiant man for me and fight the Lord's battles. For Saul thought, my hand shall not be against him, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him. But David said to Saul, who am I and what is my life or my father's family in Israel that I should be the king's son-in-law? Now there is a question about whether Saul had actually promised Merab to David for killing Goliath. In our last chapter, we read in 1 Samuel 17:25, the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who is coming up, talking about Goliath? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel, and it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. Now, that could have just been the men speculating about what Saul would do. And it could be, if that's the case, that Saul had actually not promised Merab to David. It's just the men speculating that a daughter would go to David. Maybe the people had heard Saul speaking in a hyperbolical way. I'll give my kingdom for a horse type of thing. I'll give my daughter to any man to kill that nasty Goliath. And I'll make him the richest guy on earth. So it could be that Saul had never promised Merab to David. Or it could be that Saul had promised Merab to David and then forgotten the promise. He might have decided to welch on the promise. He might have delayed fulfilling the promise. And it looks like he added a condition to get Merab. He says, you got to be a valiant man for me and fight the Lord's battles. So it's, you beat Goliath, you got Merab, but now you got to do something else. You got to fight the Philistines. So whatever happened here, David did not win Merab for killing Goliath. I hope that his father got free of taxes, but that's not actually known for sure either. It just sounds like it, but not necessarily. Now notice when Saul is trying to entice David to get him out of town, out of the court. He's using his older daughter Merab to do it, which seems a little bit uncharitable toward his own flesh and blood. If you hate the guy and you're trying to get your daughter married to him, jeez. But Saul calls the battles against the Philistines that David is going to be fighting as the Lord's battles, Yahweh's battles. Nah, that's pretty presumptuous. As Adam Clark says, the battles that David would be fighting were Saul's battles, not the Lord's battles. The Lord had left Saul. He was with David, but he had left Saul. Now, it's ironic that Saul thought, my hand shall not be against him. In other words, I'm not going to personally take David out, but let the hand of the Philistines be against him, because then when he's killed, people will say, oh, that's a sad thing, but they're not going to blame Saul for it. Remember, Saul is in a bad spot politically. Now, it's really ironic here that what Saul is thinking about the method of killing David is exactly the method David used to kill Uriah the Hittite to cover up David's adultery with Bathsheba. Get him killed in battle, he told the rest of the troops, remember, to withdraw as Uriah was exposed at the front and the supporting troops of Uriah pulled back and Uriah got killed in battle. It's ironic that David actually used the same method that Saul was using against him. Now, the offer that is made to David here, David did not directly refuse it, but it sounds like he did. In verse 18, David said to Saul, "Who am I and what is my life for my father's family in Israel that I should be the king's son-in-law?" In other words, I'm not worthy to be Merab's husband. Please, Saul, what are you saying? He didn't act like he was accepting Merab as a gift for killing Goliath. He didn't act like he was accepting Merab as a condition to go out and fight in the Philistines. He very well could have reminded Saul of that, but he didn't. He just expressed humility. In verse 18, he says, "What is my life?" What he could be saying there is, hey, my life is so very low, the status of my life is so very low that I am not worthy of marrying a king's daughter. Or it could be that David is saying, what is my life? What value is it if I have to go out and fight the Philistines and they get me killed? I don't want to be marrying your daughter if I could get killed in battle. I don't think that's it. David's too brave to worry about being killed in battle. He's basically saying, hey, I'm just a shepherd boy. I don't have any money. And remember, he's got to pay a bride price for this daughter, according to the custom of Israel, and he doesn't have money. So it sounds like David has refused the offer to go out and fight the Philistines. Now, it seems to me that David would have gone out to fight the Philistines anyway. That was his job. He's a commander in the army. He's got to go do what an officer's duty is. But it could be that he had enough discretion about when to go out and where to go out that Saul was trying to push him a little bit and saying, hey, if you go out there, get some Philistines, you'll get a daughter. Excuse me, you'll get a wife, my daughter. We go now to 1 Samuel 18, verse 19. So it came about at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that she was given to Adriel the Meholathite for a wife. Now, it sounds like should have been given to David. It sounds like David did accept the offer. He was just being humble as he accepted it. Even though it doesn't explicitly say he accepted it, the fact that it states in verse 19 that Merab should have been given to David, it sounds like David accepted the deal, but didn't get his wife. She was given to Adriel the Meholathite, otherwise unknown. So what happened? Well, it could be that Saul welched on the deal, which of course would show David great disrespect and dishonor. Perhaps Saul is trying to provoke David, trying to get him to fight a duel with him, trying to provoke him into an indiscretion against Saul, and thus making him culpable and liable to perhaps execution, maybe. It could be. Or back in verse 18 when I said it's not clear that David had refused Saul, that maybe he did refuse Saul. And then Saul then said, okay, you don't want Merab, I'll give Merab to Adriel the Meholathite. If you read verse 18, it certainly sounds like David had refused. Let me read it again. David said to Saul, who am I and what is my life for my father's family in Israel that I should be the king's son-in-law? That sounds like a refusal to me. Maybe David knew Merab. After all, David lived in Gibeah. Merab was there. He's around the family. Maybe he didn't like her. Didn't want to marry her. So whether David had agreed to marry her and Saul finked out on the deal, or whether David had just refused to marry her, at any rate, Merab is out of the picture, having married Adriel the Meholathite. So we go now to 1 Samuel 18, verses 20 and 21. Now Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. Michal, of course, is a younger daughter, younger than Merab. She loved David. When they told Saul, the thing was agreeable to him. Saul thought, I will give her to him that she may become a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore Saul said to David, for a second time you may be my son-in-law today. In other words, Merab didn't work out, David, but hey, I got another daughter, Michal, and she loves you. Jogil says she loved him because David was comely, gallant, and wise. True love, you know. Somehow I don't think Michal had a close personal relationship with David. Maybe they did. I'll tell you one thing about reading the Old Testament. It's not very romantic. Not very romantic at all. Except maybe Ruth. Well, for whatever reasons, she did stick up for David, saved his life when Saul tried to kill David in the next chapter. But hey, maybe she was sticking up for just because she wanted to save her husband because of the status and the money that's involved in her marriage. Who knows? But at any rate, when that's the people, the courtiers, told Saul that, hey, your daughter Michal seems to be lovey-dovey with David, which makes you think that maybe they're showing some affection to each other, or at least she's showing some affection about David. Whatever, the courtiers told Saul, and he said, yep, I'm going to try to get him married off. Now Saul's got another chance to get David killed by the Philistines. Also, trying to marry off Michal to David would make Saul look good in the eyes of the people. And this would especially be necessary if he had unjustly taken Merab away from David. He can say, well, okay, people, you're upset with me. I took Merab away, but look, I'm giving him something better, Michal. Never says that Merab loved David, but Michal does love David. So I'm giving her given David to her. Saul thought that he was using Michal as bait. I will give her to him that she may become a snare to him. How? Well, Saul would make killing Philistines a condition of the marriage to David, so that David would go out to kill the Philistines in order to marry Michal. He's going to have to get some foreskins from the Philistines, and maybe that'll get David killed. Now, Michal did not become a snare to David. It's ironic that Michal turned out to be the opposite of a snare for David. She delivered David from murderers dispatched from Saul in 1 Samuel 19. I said it was the next chapter. It's the next two chapters, 1 Samuel 19, when that happened. Well, it is the next chapter. We're in chapter 18 now. 1 Samuel 18, verses 22 through 24. Then Saul commanded his servants, "Speak to David secretly, saying, 'Behold, the king delights in you, and all his servants love you. Now therefore become the king's son-in-law.'" So Saul's going to get the courtiers to do a little politicking here. "So Saul's servants spoke these words to David. But David said, 'Is it trivial in your sight to become the king's son-in-law, since I am a poor man and lightly esteemed?' The servants of Saul reported to him according to these words which David spoke." A little bit of resistance on the part of David about getting married. Sounds like millennial Generation Z men today in America. Marriage? Oh, too expensive. Too much trouble. Too much feminism. The women are going to blame me if I make a bad husband. Well, let's look at why David might be reluctant to get married. First of all, if he'd been robbed of Merab, you could imagine he's reluctant to get into a deal about Michal, because he could get robbed about Michal again. And also, why would you want to marry into the family of a king who robbed you of your first wife and had welched on a deal, if that's what Saul did? But even if Saul hadn't done that, David is going to be reluctant in any event. A lowly person marrying into a royal family is nothing but trouble, asked Princess Diana, or Prince Harry. Nothing but trouble. Or I should say Meghan Markle, who married Prince Harry. She married into the royal family and had nothing but trouble. And not only that, David was a poor man, and the bride price for the daughter of a king is going to be high. So Saul had to engage in some politic and get the courtiers, urge David to marry my daughter. He told the servants to tell David, "All of the king's servants love you," in verse 22. That must have been particularly painful for Saul to have to say this. Tell David that all the servants love you. In other words, he's admitting that all of his servants do love him. They probably don't love Saul. It's a nut job. David responds in much the same way when he was offered Merab. He says, "Hey, I'm poor. I'm lightly esteemed." Poor, that means he wouldn't have money for a bride price, which would be high in those times for a king's daughter. He says, "I'm lightly esteemed." Now, that could mean he was lightly esteemed by Saul, or it could mean that he's lightly esteemed because his family was lowly in Israel, a shepherd's family in Bethlehem. I think that's what it means. I don't think David is complaining about him being lightly esteemed by Saul himself. Could be. Don't think so. So the servants take David's reluctance. I'm about to say refusal. Sounds like a refusal to me, but let's just say his reluctance back to Saul. We go now to 1 Samuel 18, verses 25 through 27. Saul then said, "Thus you shall say to David, 'The king does not desire any dowry.'" That's a bad translation, as I'll show you in a minute. This is the NASB. "The king does not desire any dowry except 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies." Now Saul planned to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. When his servants told David these words, it pleased David to become the king's son-in-law. Before the days had expired, David rose up and went, he and his men, and struck down 200 men among the Philistines. Then David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in full number to the king, that he might become the king's son-in-law. So Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, for a wife. Now Saul is trying to convince David to marry Michal through means of his courtiers. And so he takes care of the "I'm a poor boy" problem. "I don't have enough money for the bride price" problem. He says the king doesn't desire bride price except 100 foreskins. Now, the NASB says the king does not desire a dowry. A dowry in law is what a woman brings into the marriage, or a woman's family brings into the marriage, into the family. This is not a woman. This is a man, David, bringing money into the family. And so it's not a dowry. I learned that years ago in law school. Actually, if I remember correctly, the word is a curtsy in medieval European times, a curtsy, not a dowry. But this is not medieval England. And so how do other translations translate that word? The NIV has "price for the bride." Holman Christian Study Bible has "bride price." That's the best translation. The king does not desire a bride price. All he not in money at least, but he does require as a bride price 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Why would Saul want foreskins? Does he want to tack them up on his wall somewhere? No, he wants proof that David had killed 100 Philistines. That's pretty rough. You got to really love somebody to go out and kill 100 Philistines to marry him. Now, the Philistines were almost the only neighboring people who didn't circumcise themselves. The Arabians did, the Edomites did, the Midianites did. In fact, I remember reading somewhere else that it was only in Canaan that you find the uncircumcised. That's why the Jews were constantly talking about these uncircumcised pagans. It's because that's who surrounded them in Canaan. But if you get outside of Canaan, like in Moab and Ammon, they didn't circumcise either. Excuse me, they did circumcise, just like the Jews did, but not in Canaan, not the Philistines. They were uncircumcised. Jameson Fawcett Brown says this, quote, "Such mutilations on the bodies of their slain enemies were commonly practiced in ancient war, and the number told indicated the glory of the victory." So Israel's just acting like people in their culture did. Saul was. Give me some foreskins. Of course, the point is, if David's got to kill 100 Philistines, maybe one of those is going to take him out. David heard that. It says it pleased David to become the king's son-in-law. Why? Well, it's a great honor to be the king's son-in-law. Perhaps he loved Michael. Michael loved him. Maybe he loved Michael. He knew her probably at the court there. Besides, he's fighting the enemies of God, the Philistines, so that's nice. And he didn't have to come up with money for a bride price, so he's pretty happy. He's pleased. End of verse 26 says, "Before the days had expired." What days? Well, that would be the days required for the consummation of the marriage. Before the days had expired, before he was scheduled to get married is what that means. He went and he struck down 200 men among the Philistines. Now, that's interesting because Saul only asked for 100. Why did David kill 200? Well, first of all, there's a textual problem here. The Septuagint has 100, but most of all the other translations go to the Masoretic text and Home Christian Study Bible, King James, Young's Literal Translations, God's Word translations all have 200. So we're going to assume 200 is accurate. So if so, why did David kill an extra 100 Philistines? Well, perhaps he wanted to doubly show his obedience to Saul. Maybe he wanted to show how much he loved Michael. Michael, you're not only worth 100 foreskins, you're worth 200 foreskins. How'd you like to tell your wife, "Hey, man, you are so valuable to me. You are worth 200 foreskins of enemy penises." Well, for whatever reason, David did his job. Of course, David, he kills bears with his bare hands and lions and giant Goliaths. He's not worried about killing 200 Philistines. We go now to 1 Samuel 18, verses 28 through 30, and we will finish this chapter. "When Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David and that Michal's son, Saul's daughter, loved him, then Saul was even more afraid of David. Thus Saul was David's enemy continually." So his plan backfired because David managed to win, get all the foreskins. His plan didn't work out, Saul's plan. David didn't get killed. In fact, he killed all the Philistines. And his own daughter is in love with his mortal enemy. What a mess. And so he became even more afraid of David. Verse 29, "Thus Saul was David's enemy continually. Then the commanders of the Philistines went out to battle, and it happened as often as they went out that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so his name was highly esteemed." In other words, he kept whipping up on the Philistines, whipping up on them, winning military victory after military victory, and so David is a big shot in Israel, and poor old Saul, the half-demented, gosh, it sounds like a president we've got. The demented Saul is more and more unpopular. Verse 28 says, "When Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David," how did Saul see and know that? Well, first of all, David kept having military success after military success. He also saw that all the people loved him. Well, where did all that come from? God, Yahweh, being with David. You know, I hate the faith message with pretty much of a strong passion. Prosperity gospel. But what they're doing is perverting something that really is true, is that God will prosper in the sense of making successful his people. He just will, because he loves you. He loves us. He loved David, and so David prospered. Saul's daughter Michal loved David, so now Saul knows that he cannot use Michal to get rid of David. That might have been why he was willing to sacrifice his daughter to David, is because he was going to use Michal to scheme against David and bring him down. But on the contrary, Michal is now doing everything she can to block Saul's efforts. Next chapter, we'll see that. She's going to save David's life. So Saul becomes even more afraid, verse 29, more afraid. Now he's afraid that the marriage would pave David's way to the throne. David's going to take the throne away from Saul. Now, I have a question. Is Saul that paranoid? Does he think David would try to revolt and kill Saul? I mean, think about it. David has been loyal to Saul. He's been killing the Philistines. He's married into the family. He's never once uttered a word of rebellion or insurrection. Nothing. Was Saul that paranoid? Well, maybe he was. But Saul doesn't seem to have understood David at all. He's paranoid. Well, when you got demons, and when the Holy Spirit of God has left you, and you're so full of yourself, so full of fears, well, yeah, he was afraid. Unjustly so. Now it says in verse 30, the commanders of the Philistines went out to battle, and then David went out and fought them and became more wise than all the servants of Saul. That's because he kept winning the battles, and everybody said this is the best, the superstar of the Saul administration. Somebody or some people have asked the question, doesn't the Mosaic law say that newlyweds are not to fight during their first year of marriage, but they're supposed to stay home and cheer up their wives, as the King James has it, and everybody goes, ha, 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 because that means have sex with them. Yeah, cheer them up. Well, that's an interesting question. John Gill says that this law that I just cited, I don't have the cite to it right now, but you know the law, that law didn't refer to a war that was not specifically commanded by God against the seven nations. In other words, if it was the seven nations of Canaan, a big war like Joshua fought, during the first year of marriage, the soldier's not to go out. His uxoriousness, his concern for his wife might make him less than a good soldier. But David is not fighting against the seven nations of Canaan, as the law contemplated. He's just going out on raids against the Philistines, and so the law doesn't apply to him. Well, John Gill's acting like a good Jewish lawyer. I don't know if I would go that far if I were a judge. It could be that the law merely gave an option to stay at home the first year of one's marriage, but it did not require the soldier to stay home. He could optionally stay home if he wanted to. I'm not sure that's the answer either. I'd have to look at that law and become a Jewish judge. Interesting legal question. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished 1 Samuel 18. We are now prepared to go to 1 Samuel 19. In chapter 19, we will see Saul again trying to kill David. He's already thrown a spear at him twice and missed. He's tried to get him killed by sending him out to get 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Failed. He's going to try again in the next chapter. I hope you stay tuned for that exciting chapter, and I hope you enjoyed this one.